Listen. Can you hear them? Voices. A multitude of voices. Some whispering, some shouting, and some even screaming. Listen to them. They all have something to say. But don't listen too closely. You might not like what you hear. Broken Sea Audio Productions presents the third annual Halloween audio season. Voices in the Dead of Night. Coming October 2009 to BrokenSea.com. For those of you who have yet to make my acquaintance, please allow me a moment to introduce myself. I am the imaginary friend. I am the clandestine individual conjured up by those who are in need of sharing their deepest secrets, oftentimes in their darkest, most unfortunate hours. I have listened to thousands of accounts over the years, and always without prejudice or pronouncement of moral judgment of any kind. It's one of my job's perks, you might say. Whether you are a new acquaintance or an old friend, I trust that you will find my accounts exceptionally curious. In the interest of full disclosure, my attorney has advised me to warn you that some of these tales are quite unsettling. Even more so than in my first collection. If you find yourself second-guessing what lurks in the twilight shadows, or if some of these tales stimulate your own nefarious tendencies, neither my publisher nor I can be held liable for any criminal actions or nervous insomnia that may result. However, you can be sure I will be along shortly to listen attentively to your very special account.
Here are what people are saying about P.S. Gifford's The Further Accounts of the Imaginary Friend. P.S. Gifford's combination of horror and wit make his stories the potato chip of the genre. Bet you can't read just one. Billy Tackett, Dark Artist. Once again, my skin is lifted into spineless chills as Gifford spins his relentlessly frightening tales and tells. A tremendous addition to any horror fan's collection. Kimberly Reiser, author. These are the kinds of stories that chill to the bone as you read them and lurk in the corners of your mind long after that. Alicia Benson, author. For more information on the further accounts of the imaginary friend, please visit www.psgifford.com.
And now, it's time for the Broken Sea Audio Production OTR Swag Cast.
These are the hot dreams for the body of the men. Ladies in the night, do you represent the light?
Let's see. Audio Thursday will be online with one push of a button. I wonder where everybody else is online. Stevie's still there. But Bill Mac, Damaris, and Paul haven't been online for a week or three now. Of course, Bill's not filling my inbox with OTR to download and crash my hard drive. There's always a big silver lining on that one. Well, let's see. I put the wrong art up again for Maud. That'll drive Steve and Alexa crazy. What the? A TARDIS? A TARDIS? In my house? I thought Mac took that thing to Germany. Maybe he has some cool swag for me. Yo, Mac, what's...
My plan for Halloween world domination moves ever onward. First Grandad, then Mark Kalita, then Damaris, and Palm Henry.
Draven? Wait, what are you doing with... Where's Mac? Why are you in Mac's TARDIS? Is Bill in there?
Bill, my Grandad is not in there. But Kyra the Dalek 2.0 is.
Exterminate.
Your sister's a...
Kyra the Dalek. 2.0.
Is this a sounding board episode?
No, David Subkoyak. This is Draven and Kyra the Dalek. 2.0. Conquering the Halloween universe.
Exterminate! Exterminate! Exterminate!
Hey, Mac, those guns are real.
Exterminate!
Hey,
exterminate!
Just as I planned. For the most dramatic effect, my trusty sidekick, Kyra the Dalek 2.0.
That's me.
And I traveled back in time 4 hours in Mark Kalita's TARDIS, blasted a hole in the foundation of Dave's house, covered it with a hairspray trapdoor, filled it with the man-eating sea monkeys, and returned to this continuum to maximize the audio drama effect. Now, hooligan creepazoids, while I and my trusted sidekick, Kyra the Dalek 2.0,
that's me,
plan our destruction of Stevie the Mixer, Farnaby, here's some OTR tales of horror to scare the PJs off you all.
And now, tonight's presentation of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. Tonight, we bring you transcribed a story of what might have happened in the famous Lizzie Borden case. We call it Goodbye, Miss Lizzie Borden. So now, starring Paula Winslow, Virginia Gregg, and Irene Tedrow, here is tonight's suspense play, Goodbye, Miss Lizzie Borden.
I do with my purse. Oh, there it is. Oh, dear, I know I've forgotten something. Something.
Is that everything, ma'am?
Huh? Oh, yes, just the two suitcases. What are you doing with the trunk, expressman? There isn't any trunk, only the two bags. I'm only going for a short visit.
My trunk, Miss Emma. I'm leaving.
Oh, Maggie.
It's all right, expressman. You can take the trunk out.
Yes, ma'am.
Maggie, you can't.
I can't help it. I'm sorry, I really am, but I can't stand it another minute.
Oh, dear. They all leave. They always do. What are we going...
I'm sorry, Miss Emma. I've only stayed this long for your sake. I couldn't bear to leave you alone with her.
Thank you, Maggie.
Now you'll be gone off on your little vacation, and she'll have somebody else in the kitchen maybe before you come back.
Oh, dear, Maggie. What shall we do? What are we going to do?
I can't stand it, Miss Emma. I never feel alone in this house. I'm cleaning about, thinking no evil, and then I get a shiver between my shoulder blades, and I turn around, and there she is, perfectly still, just looking at me, with that look she's had since the trial. More than a body can stand, and I'm leaving.
I know, Maggie. She's always spying. She knows every move I make. I know.
Never a party, no callers, not a friend to drop in of an evening. It's like a house of death.
It is a house of death. I can't stand it any more than you can. That's why I'm going down to Fairhaven. I can't stand being cooped up with her any longer.
Then you know what I mean, Miss Emma.
Have you told her?
No. No. You want to know the truth? I was afraid to say anything. Thought I might get my trunk away with your things before she knew.
Where is she?
Upstairs.
Well, you'd better hurry then. Goodbye, Maggie.
Goodbye, Miss. I'm sorry. And don't miss your train.
Oh, I won't. I have a half hour yet. And it isn't as if there wasn't another one soon after, you know.
Well, I know you, Miss Emma. Don't miss them both. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Maggie. Oh, what am I going to do?
Miss Lizzie, Miss Borden is out.
Oh, dear. Why can't they leave us in peace? Oh, now, what did I do with my gloves? Oh, I wonder what time it is. Maggie! Oh, she's gone. Oh, dear. Lizzie will be furious. Oh, who is it? Who is it?
Miss Borden.
Oh, no, 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 you can't come in. My sister won't see you. Please, take your shoe out of the door.
So this is the scene of the crime.
Oh, please.
Sports found over there.
Please, my sister.
Mine's spattered all over the walls. Had them repapered, haven't you?
Oh.
Nice happy pattern, too. Oh, this is the picture, isn't it? The one that had 46 blood spots on it. You're Miss Lizzie Borden, I presume.
Oh, no, no, I'm
not. I must say, you're not what I expected. Out west where I come from, when a woman's tough, she's tough. Now, Miss Lizzie, I'm here
I am
to...
not Miss Lizzie. I'm Miss Emma.
Oh, the sister. That accounts for it. Well, Miss Emma, this is the anniversary of the Second Street murders, isn't it? It's just a year since Mr. and Mrs. Borden were murdered by...
Since my father and stepmother died. We don't talk about it.
I missed your sister's trial. Some old girl, I heard.
She was acquitted. We don't talk about it.
Of course not. But the public is interested, you know. Now, I'm from Cripple Creek, Colorado, Miss Emma. Greatest town on earth. Pick up gold right on the street. I represent the Cripple Creek Record, and I'm here to get some impressions for my paper. Second Street Revisited and all
that. Oh, you're one of those nasty female reporters. Oh, Lizzie hates reporters. I know she won't listen to you for a minute.
Oh, well. Hey, isn't that a picture of Pike's Peak on the wall?
Oh, yes. It's quite artistic, isn't it? Uncle Morris brought it back to me from the gold fields. It's all he brought back. He painted it himself.
Now, isn't that a coincidence? I'm from the Pike's Peak Goldfields myself.
Oh.
Morris. Is your Uncle Morris an old codger, 60-ish maybe?
A droopy mustache.
That's it, a droopy mustache and a sort of...
Tall and thin. Oh, my goodness. Do you know Uncle Morris?
I should say I do. I knew him well in Cripple Creek.
Oh.
Who is the old coyote? Put her there, Miss Emma. Any niece of old man Morris is a friend of mine.
Oh, how do you do? Won't you sit down, Mr...
Nellie Cutts. You just call me Nellie. Now, as I was saying... I represent the Cripple Creek Record, and I'm on kind of a roving commission to report how things are on this side of the range. And listen, this Borden story's got everything. New England old maid, Sunday school teacher, and all that. Just as a story, you know. Color? She ups and kills half the family with an axe. Interview with Miss Lizzie Borden a year after. Great stuff. They eat it up in Cripple Creek.
She won't see you. Lizzie won't see you. I know that.
Well, how about a word from you, the sister? How does it feel, Miss Emma, to live day in and day out within sight of the very bloodstains, as you might say? How does it feel to take meals with a woman who was tried for the crime?
Oh, I've stood it as long as I can. That's why I'm going to Fairhaven. I can be alone in Fairhaven.
Must have been pretty tough on the nerves this last year. I guess Miss Lizzie'd be difficult to live with, huh?
Shh! She hears. She's always listening and spying. She never leaves me alone. Oh, dear, I mustn't miss the 3:37. What time is it?
You won't miss it. It's only quarter of.
Oh, my watch says 10.
No, I set mine at the station.
Lizzie
just
Lizzie Borden took an axe and gave her mother 40 weapons.
Oh.
And when she saw what she had done, she gave her father 41.
Oh.
Lizzie Borden.
Go away, you naughty child. Go away.
What was that? She gave her father 41. Oh, how did it begin?
She gave her father 41.
Stop it, you hear me?
This is a classic. Lizzie Borden took an axe and gave
her... Oh, please, please don't. She hears every word you say down here. Her room is right up there.
Right up there. But she wasn't up there when her father was being murdered, was she? She was in the barn eating pears, she says. Now, Miss Emma, just sit down a minute, please. Is it true that on the morning of the murder, the breakfast consisted of bananas, cookies, and cold mutton soup?
I don't know. I wasn't here. I was at Fairhaven.
Cold mutton soup in August. No wonder somebody committed murder. Well, now, Miss Emma, your stepmother was found upstairs with her head battered in with an axe.
That's right.
And your father's body was on the sofa here, like this.
Oh, don't!
Miss Lizzie spread the alarm. The front door was triple locked, and Miss Lizzie was watching the side door, so she says. She was watching from the upper barn window, just standing there, eating a pear and looking out, she says. How could anyone outside have done it? How could they escape right under her eyes if Miss Lizzie wasn't lying?
My sister was acquitted.
It beats me how they acquitted her.
Blood.
Hmm?
Blood. Whoever did it was covered with blood.
Well, what about it?
Everybody saw Lizzie within 10 minutes of the crime, and she hadn't a spot of blood on her. The biggest professors at Harvard tried to find blood on her clothes. There wasn't any. That's why they had to acquit her.
Tell me, Miss Emma, did you look carefully at Miss Lizzie to see if there was any blood on her, her hair, perhaps, or her shoes?
Certainly not my own sister. Besides, I didn't see Lizzie till I got back from Fairhaven that night.
Maybe she used an apron, one of those big coveralls.
They never found one.
Easy enough to hide a thing like that in your own house. They never found the axe either, did they?
No, they never found the axe. I often wondered where it got to.
They searched the house?
Yes, they searched.
They took up the carpet, didn't they? Did they search the chimney?
Of course they did.
Did they open the flue?
No. We wouldn't have them tearing up the house.
I'd tear it up. Loose brick here. Wouldn't be hard.
Oh, Lizzie wouldn't have it. Everything's Lizzie's now. Lizzie's and mine.
Miss Emma, excuse me, but is there any insanity in your family?
Certainly not. That's the first thing they started asking. Oh, they asked ever so many questions about Uncle Morse.
Good old Uncle Morse. He arrived for a visit, didn't he? Just the day before the murders.
Yes, and they were awful about Uncle Morse. They kept asking people if he was quite right in the head, just because he doesn't work steady any place, but sort of drifts around. Oh, it made me terribly angry. Uncle Morse is as sane as I am.
Where was he the morning of the murders?
Visiting around. He had a perfect alibi. It was just humiliating the way they snooped around about everybody. Where was Uncle Morse? Where was I?
Miss Emma, tell me about the kitten. Oh, they say the kitten was found down in the cellar. Dead. It had been killed with an axe.
The kitten. The kitten was the hardest. I cried for a week. It brought on my neuralgia. I like kittens. Lizzie never cried at all. It was Lizzie's kitten. She's a hard woman.
Yes. Well, now, Miss Emma, let's get back to the fatal day. Mrs. Borden is lying in her blood upstairs. The servant is downstairs. She hears Mr. Borden at the front door trying to get in. She goes to let him in. She finds the door is triple locked. She lets him in, and upstairs on the landing, she hears a horrible, gloating laugh. The murderer is standing up there, Miss Emma. And as she sees her second victim walk into her trap, she laughs.
It wasn't Lizzie. Lizzie was downstairs.
She changed her story. First she said she was downstairs, then upstairs. She was lying then. Well, in comes Mr. Borden and lies down for a nap, right here on the sofa. The murderer covers herself with something. And creeps up on the old man with an axe from behind, like this, and brings down the axe again and again.
No,
was
no,
it Miss Lizzie?
Oh, no, 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 it wasn't Lizzie. It wasn't
Emma.
Oh,
you talk too much, Emma.
Listening to Goodbye, Miss Lizzie Borden. Tonight's presentation in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. CBS Radio reminds you to do as Sparky the firefighting dog says. Don't give fire a place to start. Be sure all cigarettes are out before discarding them. Clear your house of old newspapers, damaged furniture, and inflammable debris. Repair electrical wiring as soon as it shows signs of wear. These simple rules will help keep your valuables safe. They could even save your life. Don't gamble with fire. The odds are against you.
And now, we bring back to our Hollywood soundstage Virginia Gregg, Irene Tedrow, and Paula Winslow, starring in tonight's production, Goodbye, Miss Lizzie Borden, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
This lady's an old friend of Uncle Moore's.
You're going to miss your train, Emma.
Oh, yes, Lizzie. Oh, dear, perhaps I should have called a cab. But it's only a step from here. Goodbye, Lizzie.
Goodbye. Emma?
Yes?
You forgot your gloves.
Oh, so I did. Thank you, Lizzie. Goodbye. Goodbye, Miss...
I represent the Cripple Creek Record, Miss Lizzie. A friend of Uncle Moore? What color hair has the old man got?
Gray.
Bald as an egg. Good day, miss.
But Miss Borden, my paper wants an interview.
I don't give interviews.
Just one question, Miss Lizzie. The blood-stained apron, where did it get to?
I have nothing to say.
And the bloody axe. Why wasn't the chimney back there?
Good day, miss.
If you just say a word for my paper...
I'll have to hide them somewhere else now.
I missed the train.
You can catch the next one.
Lizzie, your apron and the axe. That's where they were all the time.
Lock the door, Emma.
You hid them there, after.
Yes. I was afraid Maggie would come down any minute. I hid them in the flue.
I always wondered where they got to. I wondered how they could search and search and never find them.
Father kept money behind that brick. He never knew I knew. And once he was dead, nobody knew about it but me.
Why did you do it?
There's a way, isn't there, to tell who's been handling a weapon?
I don't know. You've always been the clever one. I don't see any marks.
I don't either, but they say the police can. A Frenchman wrote a book about it. Besides, you bought the axe in Fairhaven. It has the star mark etched on the head.
Why, Lizzie, you knew all the time.
I saw you. I saw you from the barn window. You came out the side door and stood looking around. And I saw your face. It was all I needed. I ran to the street and I came in and found Father. It was my apron. And the blood. You needn't have used my apron, Emma.
It was the handiest, Lizzie.
And you brought the axe from Fairhaven. I only had a minute. I hid them in Father's hiding place. They were safe until that newspaper snooper began to get ideas.
Why did you hide them, Lizzie?
What else could I do? I hated her too, Emma.
Oh, you don't remember our mother as I do. You couldn't have hated Mrs. Borden as I did.
But Father... Why, Father?
After what he did to Mother? Marrying that woman so soon after? You were always soft over Father, Lizzie.
It's a relief, I suppose. Oh, time after time I've wanted to ask you about things when they were asking me questions, cross-examining, keeping after me. Oh, I wanted so badly to know, so I would know what to say, but I never dared ask you. They had spies about me all the time. Oh, I made so many mistakes. When they asked if I'd seen anybody leave the house, I was on my guard not to mention you. I said, no, nobody. So they decided it couldn't have been a stranger that did it. It must have been Lizzie. Oh, I ought to have said I saw the murderer leaving, a big bearded man with a bloody axe. But I wasn't used to lying.
And when I went on the stand and told the truth, that I hated her worse than you did, they were sure I was lying to cover you.
I had to lie about the laugh. I had to change my story and say I was up there laughing. Otherwise they would have started asking who was laughing. Whose laugh sounds like Lizzie's?
Mine.
I haven't laughed since.
Neither have I.
I haven't laughed since I found my kitten dead.
Oh, Lizzie, having to kill the kitten was the hardest. It brought on my neuralgia. I cried for a week over the kitten.
I know you did.
I cried because I had to do it, Lizzie.
Oh, I should have understood then. After the kitten, I should have been on guard. You know, I was afraid at first they'd find out you'd been away from Fairhaven.
Oh, I prayed for guidance, Lizzie. All the time I was at Fairhaven, I stayed in my room and prayed for guidance.
What's that got to do with it?
Why, don't you see? When the answer came to me, I just got the axe and started for Fall River. They thought I was still in my room.
What a risk that was.
Oh, no. No risk, Lizzie. My prayers for guidance were answered, don't you see? I was protected.
I protected you.
Why? I wonder why.
Oh, I don't know. Because I've always protected you, I suppose. Because I enjoyed having the laugh on everybody, maybe.
I never guessed. You had the laugh on me, didn't you, Lizzie?
Didn't you know I knew? No, of course you didn't.
What would you have done if they'd found you guilty?
Oh, gone through with it, I suppose. I'd have gone through with it before I'd given in to them.
I guess you would. You were always a wicked, stubborn thing.
Oh, I used to get sick of it. The jail, reporters, examining, cross-examining. I'd get sick of it and think I'd had enough. I'd tell them now the truth. And then that prosecutor would come along with his pious face like a public statue. And the very thought of giving in and admitting I'd lie would make me say, no, I'll face it. They won't break me. And they didn't.
No, they didn't.
Besides, would have been giving in for nothing. They wouldn't have believed me.
I suppose they wouldn't.
I used to wonder, if they found me guilty, what would you have done?
I used to wonder, too. But I had my guidance. I didn't let it worry me.
No, it didn't worry you. Me sitting there in court day after day, the crowd hating me.
I know, Lizzie.
Oh, how do you know? How do you know what I went through? The crowd staring, thinking I did it. The women who hiss at you at the courtroom door, they hate you. They want to see you dead. What do you know about it?
What do you know about it, Lizzie? You had the easy part. You didn't have to do it. I thought it would be like chopping wood. It isn't. Wood splits. The other strikes back. It stops you. Wood doesn't bleed, Lizzie. It doesn't fly. Jump at you. The air fills it.
I saw the wall.
You don't know. You don't know anything. You didn't have to do it. I didn't want to. Listen, there she is, Mrs. Borden, going up the stairs. I'll have to hurry.
Mrs. Borden's gone, Emma. She's been gone for a year.
No, no, she's upstairs. Don't stop me.
Put down the axe, Emma, and come with me.
Where?
Just across the street to see Dr. Bowen.
Oh, so you can put me away. So you can shut me up. I'll not be shut up, Lizzie. I wasn't meant to be shut up.
Just come and see Dr.
No, no, he'll put me away. I'll not have it, Lizzie. I'll die first. Oh, but I don't have to die, do I?
Nobody knows but you. I'm not the one to die.
Emma, what are you doing?
I'm putting on my apron. I just explained to you, Lizzie. Blood spatters. You don't want me to spoil my best fingering, do you?
Emma, listen to me. You have to go to Fairhaven. You'll miss the train. Emma. Emma.
It won't take long. It's over in a minute, Lizzie.
Emma, think what you're doing. You can't escape twice.
Oh, yes, I can. I do what I have to do, and the rest takes care of itself. Well, I don't want to. You must understand
Emma,
that.
Emma, you don't have
to. Oh, yes. I knew as soon as I saw the axe. What else did you keep it for? I knew there was to be another.
But I kept it to protect you, Emma.
Oh, Lizzie, don't talk. It only makes this harder. Now, Lizzie.
Here, give it to me. Oh, that's better.
Lizzie, can't you change your mind and give me a statement now Miss Emma's gone? Oh, there you are, Miss Emma. You missed the train after all.
You don't have to talk through the window, Miss. Take that thing off, Emma, and open the front door.
Well, good for you, Miss Lizzie.
Give me the apron, quick. I'll cover the act with the newspaper. You be quiet. Now, open the door.
Oh, this is real nice of you, Miss Lizzie. Hot day. I hope we have rain.
What's the weather forecast? What's the paper say? Fair and warmer, fair and warmer.
Oh, fair and warmer.
Now then, young woman, what do you want to know? Quickly, please.
Tell me, Miss Lizzie, the murder weapon. Is it ever found? What's your opinion? Where did it get to?
I think the murderer carried it away with him.
That's all you think?
That's all, thank you very much.
But I'm not through.
I have nothing more to say. Miss Emma's leaving now. You can walk with her to the station.
Well, hey, isn't this the Providence Journal? I hear they put out a scorching editorial wanting to know why these murders are still unsolved.
Please don't! Emma, don't miss your train. Come along.
I'll send for my things, Lizzie.
Very well, Emma.
Goodbye, Lizzie.
Isn't she coming back?
What did you say?
Isn't she coming back?
No. She isn't coming back.
So that's the axe. Whole thing torn wide open now, hmm? Will you give me a statement?
Certainly not.
Miss Emma thinks now you killed them, doesn't she? Did you, Miss Lizzie?
No, I didn't kill them.
Come on, you've been acquitted. You can't be tried again.
I didn't do it.
Then who did it? Was somebody in the house? There's the murder weapon. If you didn't do it, who did? Maggie? Miss Emma? Miss Emma, that's it. Miss Emma Borden. Why didn't I see it before?
Stop talking rubbish, young woman. I'll make a statement for you. I did it.
You killed them? You killed them both with the axe?
Yeah.
Why? Why did you?
I don't like cold mutton soup.
But it's a scoop.
It isn't a scoop.
Why not?
It isn't a scoop if you can't print it, and I'll sue you if you print it. I've been acquitted in open court, my girl. I'm innocent. And don't you forget it. You print a word and I'll sue. I've got $250,000 and I'll spend every cent of it defending my good name.
Good name? Everybody in Fall River knows you did it. You just admitted it yourself.
Never mind what I admitted. Just you keep your tongue between your teeth. You're not going to print that story so you can tear up those notes of yours.
I certainly will not tear it up. I have a duty to my paper.
I said... Tear it up.
You wouldn't.
Tear it up.
Of course, Miss Lizzie. I'm glad to oblige you. You can put down the axe. Thank you, Miss Lizzie, for your time. I'm just going.
Go on. Open the door. Go on.
Yes. Yes, of course. Thank you again. No wonder Miss Emma isn't coming back. Goodbye, Miss Lizzie.
Suspense, in which Irene Tedrow, Paula Winslow, and Virginia Gregg starred in tonight's presentation of Goodbye, Miss Lizzie Borden. Next week, be sure to listen to radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. Is produced and transcribed by Anthony Ellis. Tonight's script is written by Lillian De La Torre. The music was composed by Rene Garrigan and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. Featured in the cast were Helen Klebe, Leonard Weinrib, and Richard Beals.
This is a good time of the year to thank all of you at your station for your interest in presenting the Boris Karloff program. It's a real pleasure to work with you all, and I appreciate your cooperation very much indeed. May I also wish you and yours a most Merry Christmas and a prosperous and a Happy New Year.
Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup present Inner Sanctum Mysteries, starring Boris Karloff. Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum. This is your host. Welcome again through the squeaking door to another session of mystery, murder, and madness. Oh, excuse me if I don't get up, but I'm all worn out. Yes, I've had a hectic few days with an old friend who just blew into town. He's one of those earnest souls who insists on doing everything for himself. Consultations with the monument makers, the grave diggers, fittings at the coffin maker. Yes, quite a busy body. But then we only die once, you know.
These friends of yours, they're such unhappy people. They never seem to enjoy life. Never seem interested in any of the quiet, peaceful, good things of life. For instance, what's the use of telling one of your spooky characters about Lipton tea? They wouldn't like it. But other people enjoy that brisk Lipton flavor. They settle back in an easy chair and say to themselves, Lipton certainly has a rich, hearty flavor. Never the least bit wishy-washy. No siree. But would a ghost appreciate Lipton's? Indeed, he would not. And it's lucky Lipton's is made for real live folks who like good things, or else it wouldn't be the world's largest selling brand of tea.
Mary, you've been very hard on my friends. Very. And they won't like it. But then most live folks don't enjoy being scared to death. And that's just what's going to happen to you tonight. Our story is called The Corridor of Doom. It's an original radio play written by Robert Newman. And our star tonight is a man who gives even me the shakes. The famous star of stage, screen, and radio, Boris Karloff. Have you thought about death lately? Not the fact that it's inevitable, that it must come to all of us someday, but rather how it will come. Do you think of it as a sleep and a waking, of a sudden transition from one state of being to another, or to a state of non-being? John Clay was one of those people who never thought about it at all, until he found himself walking down that dim and endless passage which... But suppose we let Boris Karloff in the role of John Clay tell you about it himself. If your blood pressure will take it, put out the lights and come on a little trip down the corridor of doom.
When I woke up, I had no idea of where I was or how I'd gotten there. I was lying on a hard white bed in a clean white room. There was a dull pain in my abdomen. Touching it tentatively, I felt a bandage. So that was it. An operation. But for what? And where was I? At that moment, the door opened, and she came in. Good afternoon. Or is it evening?
Whichever you prefer. It doesn't matter.
My name's Clay. John Clay.
Yes.
And yours?
You can call me Neda.
Exactly. Where am I? In what hospital?
It has no name.
What? But that's ridiculous. I'd like to speak to Dr. Rogers. If you'll get him for me, please.
There is no Dr. Rogers. At least, not here.
Then who operated on me? And for what? Listen, I'm not a well man. I've a very bad heart. Will you get someone who can talk to me?
If you wish. I'll call Dr. Stone.
A chill crept through my bones. It wasn't cold. It was fear. Unreasoning and abysmal fear. The door opened again, and there stood a heavy-set man, his hair flecked with gray, and with him, my son-in-law, Alex Bartlett. Alec, I can't tell you how glad I am to see you.
Hello, Father.
But why are you standing out there? Why don't you come in?
Oh, no. No, I
shouldn't advise it, Mr. Clay.
And why not? And why... Oh, was it you who operated on me?
Yes. I'm Dr. Stone.
Why wasn't Dr. Rogers called in? He's taken care of me for years.
There wasn't time. It happened during the night. Acute appendicitis. And even as it was...
Even as it was? What? And why are you dressed that way, Alec? All in black?
Well, it's customary. After all, you are my father-in-law.
Of course I am, but... Now, look, Alec... You've got to stop being so mysterious. You know about my heart, what any sudden shock will do.
I don't think you need worry about that anymore, Mr. Clay. And as far as the mystery is concerned, this initial period of adjustment is always a little difficult.
Difficult? Do you realize what it's like, lying here helpless, completely isolated, as if I were all alone in the world, or... Isn't there someone I can talk to? Some of the other patients?
Not just yet. When the time comes, you'll meet them.
But, look, Doctor, I can't stand much more of this. I can't. If I don't find someone who really cares about me, who'll treat me like a normal human being... My dog. How about my dog?
What do you think, Doctor?
Yes, that's possible. We'll see what we can do, Mr. Clay. Come along, Bartlett.
Goodbye, Father.
You'll be back, won't you, Alec?
I don't know. I'll try, but it's difficult. Very difficult.
Then don't go, Alec. Don't leave me here all alone. Come back. Come back. I waited and watched, watched and waited. Then the door opened, and there was the doctor again. There was a small, thin-faced man with him this time, wearing the white coat of an orderly and carrying a black box with a handle. My dog! You brought my dog!
All right, Martin. Give it to him.
Yes, sir.
Thank heaven, now at least. Come on, Kerry. Come on, boy. Get up. Wake up. Boy, what's the matter? Kerry! He's not asleep. He's dead.
You wanted him, Mr. Clay.
But why didn't you tell me? When did he die? How?
How old was he?
11 and a half. Maybe 12.
Pretty old for a dog. That's probably why he could come.
What do you mean? What are you trying to do to me? Don't you realize I'm a sick man?
Easy, easy, Mr.
I won't take it easy. I won't stay here another minute. I'm leaving right now.
Sorry, but I don't think we can permit
that. Oh, well, we'll see about that.
You're getting yourself all upset for no reason, Mr. Clay. Making it very difficult for the rest of us. Martin,
yes,
you'd better let me have some of that bottle there. About 10 cc's.
The red medicine?
Yes.
I don't want any medicine. I won't take it.
Now, please, Mr. Clay.
I won't, I tell you. No, I don't want the... It's awful. Salty. It... It tastes like...
Yes. But I think you'll find that it will make things much easier for you. Very much easier.
You're doping me up. That's what you're doing. Putting me to sleep. You think that when I wake up, I'll forget about everything.
Yes, Mr. Clay. You'll forget about everything.
Everything. I was somewhere deep down under the earth. It was a passageway, stone-flagged and with stone walls, and I was walking slowly down it in my bare feet. I could feel the chill of the cold stones through the thick layer of dust. The passageway stretched ahead of me, endlessly. And suddenly, I noticed that there were doors set into the walls on either side, closed doors. And on each door there was a name, Abel. Abercrombie. Abington. Where was I? What was this place? What was behind those awful, ominously closed doors? Something seemed to be drawing me on down the terrible passageway. Addison. Agar. Allen. I could feel the cold creeping up my legs, higher and higher, my heart pounding faster and faster. And suddenly I knew where I was and where I was going, knew what was waiting for me there ahead of me down the passage. Exerting all my will, I turned, tried to go back. With a roaring in my ears, I was falling through the darkness, falling. When I opened my eyes, I was in that cold, white room again, clutching the blankets with trembling hands.
How do you feel now, Mr. Clay?
You cried out, sir, as if...
A dream. The most awful, horrible nightmare I ever had.
A dream? The doctor will be very interested. Would you care to tell me all about it?
Oh, I don't even want to think about it.
It was about your former life?
Former life.
Oh, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that. I meant... Here, where are you going?
Get my clothes to get out of here. I won't stay
but
here
you
another
can't go. You can't. Martin, help me.
Please, oh, let go. Don't you realize that if I do stay here, if I dream that dream again... Listen. I was in a passageway. An endless, eternal passageway like a corridor of doom. It stretched on and on to infinity with doors, closed doors on either side. And on each one of the doors in alphabetical order, there was a name. The name of all those who had died since the beginning of time. I was walking down that corridor on my bare feet and... Why? Why are you looking at me that way?
You mustn't talk about that. You mustn't, do you hear?
But you asked me...
You didn't dream that dream. You couldn't have. And you've got to get it out of your mind. We'll help you. We'll give you a massage. That should make you relax. The alcohol, Martin, right over there.
A massage? You think that'll help?
If it doesn't, we'll call Dr. Stone. Try something else. Martin.
I see. Now what? What are you staring at?
Your feet.
On the soles. Dust. Thick, gray dust.
Dust. Like the dust in the passage, the corridor of doom. And that means... It wasn't a dream. It means... I was really there.
Dirty feet on those nice, clean sheets. No wonder our friend the nurse seemed so upset. Or was that the reason? Maybe she was just disappointed that he still hadn't told her about his operation. As that always has them in stitches. Great big stitches. Like the ones they take in a shroud.
Mr. Host, I'm afraid I just can't believe this story. I can't believe that it really happened.
Is that so, Mary? Do you think Mr. Clay got that gray dust in his feet because he has feet of clay?
There you go again, always looking on the discouraging side of things. I really do believe I'd rather talk to cheerful folk, like those nice young men and women who sang that new Lipton Tea song when I was at the studio. Sing a song of Lipton's. Yes, that's the way people ought to feel about tea. Because, you know, when you're feeling discouraged or tired, there's nothing quite like that brisk flavor of Lipton tea to perk you up. Yes, brisk means that Lipton's is never wishy-washy. No, no, no siree, as they say in the song. So when you've had a busy afternoon, or maybe when friends drop in for a little talk, pour yourself a cup of cheer with brisk-flavored Lipton tea. It's got a special flavor that always tastes like home. And it always tastes like more, too.
Well, now I think it's about time to take another little walk. Yes, down the corridor of doom with our star, Boris Karloff. And by the way, don't be concerned about getting too tired, because you'll only have to walk one way. That's the nice part of a trip like that. You don't have to worry about coming back.
I lay there, staring down at my feet. No, it had not been a dream. But there, on my feet, was the thick, heavy dust from the corridor of doom. I had been there, walking down its awful silence, not in my mind, but in the flesh. My heart clenched like an icy fist that I threw the blankets aside, started to get up.
Mr. Clay, what are you doing? Where are you going?
Let me go.
But you can't get up. You can't leave.
Oh, yet. Let me go.
Martin, quick, say, help me.
Please, Mr. Clay. Oh, for heaven's sake, let me go. Don't you realize what this means? If it wasn't a dream, and if I stay here, go down to that horrible place
We've
again.
We've got to make him quiet down. Some more of that medicine, Martin. Oh. Another 10 cc's.
Right. Oh, no, no more of that. It's here, Mr. Clay.
You must take it. You must. It will make you sleep. Sleep so soundly that you won't be able to go down there again.
No, but... All right. Give it to me.
Here. You stay here, Martin. I'll go get Dr. Stone and tell him.
Better, Mr. Clay? I don't know. Color. Dark red. Taste. It's like... Yes, I know. And it makes me sleepy. My eyes get heavy and... Have you been here for a long time, Martin?
No, not long.
What is it like outside of this room?
It's strange. Like no place else.
And the other patients, what are they like?
They're strange, too.
Listen, Martin... I'm a rich man. You're the only friend I've got here. You've got to help me.
Whether you're rich or poor doesn't matter. As for helping you, that's what I'm here for.
You've got to stay here. Watch me. Every minute. My heart. I don't think it'll stand much more. My first sensation was one of cold, numbing cold creeping up my limbs. I reached for the blankets, couldn't find them. Then I opened my eyes, and I was there again, back there in that awful endless passage, that corridor of doom. The same stone wall, stone floor, covered with a thick layer of dust. The same doors with a name on each one, on both sides of me. But now... Now I was up to the bees. That one there, Barber, next to it, Babbitt, and then Backer. I tried to cry out, but I couldn't utter a sound. I tried to stop, check myself. My muscles didn't respond. Slowly, heavily, I continued walking on down that endless passage. Past Badger, Baffin, Bagley, past the bees and towards the seas. Towards a door... with my name on it. My heart pulsed, pounding with terror. My breath rasped in my throat. Convulsively, I clutched at the walls, forced myself completely around. Then, as if I were fighting against a roaring gale, I drove myself back. One step I took, two, three, and I stumbled and was falling again. Falling through darkness, complete, absolute, unending. Even before I opened my eyes, I knew where I was. Back in my room, the sheets crumpled in my sweating hands. I lay there for a moment. I knew that this was my last chance. Slipped out of bed, tiptoed to the door of the room, opened it a crack and peered out a hospital corridor. And sitting at a desk halfway down it, the nurse. Could I slip past her? Then on a table next to the door, I saw the telephone. A telephone! Now I could get help. Reach someone who would save me, take me out of this place. Picking it up quietly, I dialed my daughter's number, Alec Bartlett's wife.
Hello?
Jane? Oh, thank heaven.
Hello?
Jane, it's your father. Listen, you've got to help me. You've got to come and get me. I'm at the hospital. Alec knows where.
Hello, is anyone there?
Yes, can't you hear me? Didn't you hear what I said? It's your father and... Jane! Hung up. I heard her, but she couldn't hear me. Something wrong with the phone, her phone. I've got to get hold of somebody. Somebody, but who? Dr. Rogers? Oh, might be out. And if they come in while I'm phoning... Oh, I know, of course.
Police headquarters, Ryan speaking.
Hello, police. This is John Clay of Riverside Road. I'm at a hospital, I don't know where.
Hello?
Can't you hear me, officer? For heaven's sake, listen. It's a matter of life and death. John Clay at a hospital. My son-in-law, Alec Bartlett, can tell you where.
Hello?
Officer, listen, don't hang up, don't.
Oh, I'm nuts.
Officer, hello.
Anything the matter, Mr. Clay?
Dr. Stone, your telephone, there's something wrong with it.
No, Mr. Clay, there's nothing wrong. Not with the telephone.
But I tried to make two calls, two different numbers, and...
I know. And you should have known. Nurse, Aurelie...
Should have known what? Why couldn't they hear me when I could hear them? Why?
Yes, Dr. Stone?
Will you put Mr. Clay back into bed?
No.
I'm awfully sorry, sir. I only went out for a minute. Come on, Mr. Clay.
No,
please.
Leave me alone. Please,
Mr.
let
Clay,
go.
Please.
No. No use struggling. You know that, don't you?
Yes. I know. Doctor, I won't have to go back down there again, will I? Down to the corridor?
That's not up to me. All right, nurse. I think we're ready for another dose. The final one.
Yes, doctor.
No, doctor. No, not that red medicine. Not again.
I'm sorry, but you've had a lot of time. All the time we can give you.
All right, Mr. Clay.
No, I won't take it. You know what it means, doctor. If I go back down there again to the corridor, it'll be to the letter C. To the place where my name is.
If he won't take it by himself, perhaps you'd better help her, Martin.
Yes, sir.
No, here, no, no, Clay. I won't. Again, I knew where I was before I opened my eyes. I could feel the dust under my bare feet and through the dust the biting chill of the cold stones. I was there, back in the corridor, walking down its silent length past the blank, closed doors. But the names on the doors, now they were all C's. Cabot, Cadden, Cahoon. On I walked, the beating of my heart, the pounding of my pulse loud in my ears. On down the passage, no longer even trying to fight against what I knew was inevitable. On past Cameron, Chelsea, Chiswick, and then, suddenly, terribly, one door. A door with my name on it, gaping, waiting for me. I tried to stop, to turn, but my legs carried me forward. I was but two doors away. I could see into it now, see that it contained nothing. Absolutely nothing, not even a coffin. Just stone walls and a flat stone slab. I was turning to step over the threshold. I made a last convulsive effort. Merciful heavens, help me! Save me!
All right, Martin. Pick him up.
Yes, sir.
Is it all over?
Hello, Bartlett. In at the death, eh? I'll see if there's any pulse, of course, but I should think it is all over.
It is stone, but not the way you think.
What? Clay!
He's not dead.
No thanks to you. All right, get him up, both of you. Here, Mr. Clay, let me help you.
It's all right, Martin. I'll be fine from now on.
But how?
Don't look so surprised, Alec. Mr. Martin is a detective. I hired him some time ago. You see, I had a feeling that something was wrong when that railing broke accidentally, and I took that bad fall. So I decided I should investigate.
You can't prove it. You can't prove anything.
The first results of Martin's investigation showed me what bad financial shape you were in. And it was then that I realized that you had actually been trying to murder me to get hold of my money. So I faked that story of having a very bad heart.
You mean that...
I thought it would give you the idea of trying something more subtle and less dangerous. And it certainly did.
But you still can't prove anything, not a thing.
No, don't you worry about that. Don't forget. Come back here, Bartlett.
You'll never have a chance to prove it.
Come back, Bartlett.
Oh, you shot him, killed him.
Well, I couldn't have. I fired up in the air to get him to stop.
Come on.
I don't understand. There's not a mark on him. But he is dead.
He was the one who had the bad heart. That's what gave me the idea of pretend. Good heavens, look.
At what?
This hallway was supposed to be the corridor of doom. When I reached the door with my name on it, I was supposed to die. Look. Look at the name on that door there. The one right next to him.
Bartlett. His name. So what?
Nothing, Martin. Nothing at all.
Now, where do you think old Dr. Stone got the idea for that little alphabetical graveyard? That's right, for me. Huh? You don't believe me? Then come on home with me tonight and I'll show you the one in the cellar of my house. What's more, I'll show you a door and a neat stone slab with your name on it.
Nonsense, Mr. Host. Mr. Clay just explained that the whole thing was a hoax, and I'm not going to sit here and hear you say otherwise.
Well, then don't sit. Stand up and we'll take a walk, Mary Bennett. Yes, back to your name. Back to the bees. Baker Bartlett Bennett.
You don't scare me.
Yeah? Well, how would you like it if we went to the L's and found a door marked Lipton?
Oh, why, that's fine. Inside, we'd find a wonderful, friendly beverage, Lipton's, the tea with the brisk flavor, the tea that's welcome at all hours of the day. Yes, the largest-selling brand of tea in the whole world, Lipton tea.
And now a word of advice. If you should wake up tonight with a sudden chill, find yourself walking barefoot down a dusty stone corridor with doors on both sides of it, don't get excited. Just insist on a doom with a view. By the way, this month's Inner Sanctum mystery novel is The Whistling Legs by Roman McDougall. Yes, and next week's Inner Sanctum story, directed by Hyman Brown, and brought to you by Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup. Next week's story is about women. Yes, two women who like to be treated rough. Choke them to death, shoot them, murder them. They'll love you for it. And who do you think is going to be their boyfriend? That's right. Boris Karloff. Boris Karloff will be with us again next week, because who else could love such women? So, if you're in a tender mood, tune in next Tuesday. Until then, good night. Pleasant dreams.
Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. In the year 1692, an American town went mad, or at least that part of it known as Salem Village, beginning with accusations of 10 young girls that a West Indian slave had bewitched them. Hysteria ran like a rabid dog through the village. Within 4 months, hundreds were arrested and tried, 31 of whom were hanged or burned, and one pressed to death with stones. And the man generally blamed for the hideously bigoted persecution of the innocent and the helpless was a name reviled in our history, Cotton Mather. Our mystery drama, Burn, Witch, Burn, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Ian Martin and stars Howard Da Silva. It is sponsored in part by Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, Brewers of Budweiser, and Buick Motor Division. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
When you say but, you've said a lot of things nobody else can say.
A lot of things, like Beechwood aging for 100% natural carbonation. That's how the Budweiser people age their beer. Nobody else does it that special way. But then, nobody else is brewing the king of beers. I could tell you a lot of other things about Budweiser and why it's the largest selling beer in the world. But it all comes back to the Budweiser taste, and that speaks for itself. Loud and clear. Hear it talking?
There is no other one. There's only something left. Because the king of beers is leading all the rest. When you say Budweiser,
you've said it all.
Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis.
At the time of the witch hunt, no man in our country was more feared than Cotton Mather. The picture of this dark, imperious, infamous man who led the persecution, who in his perverted zeal and fanatic Puritanism saw men, women, and even children condemned on the flimsiest of evidence, who swept down from his Boston pulpit like a scourge, and whose blind conviction in his righteousness in the name of the Lord spread terror like a plague, is strangely... Oh, but then I should say no more, for what I was about to say is a large part of this story.
Burn, witch, burn! You should welcome the fires of hell, since ye would not repent. The abomination of the body you defiled remains to be purified, while the flesh is consumed and returned to the earth and ashes. While the bones melt and run into the fire, sisters, brothers, let us lift up our voices in prayer. Let the mischief of their own deed fall on their own heads. Let hot burning coals fall on them. Let them be cast into the fire that they never rise again. The righteous also shall give thanks unto thy name, and the just continue in thy sight. Amen.
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 Amen. Amen.
Now let ye all return to your homes and meditate upon the grace of our heavenly Father, and return tomorrow so that ye may see the other witch perish as she deserves.
The fire has almost burned itself out.
Yes, Judge Sewell. And the evil it ringed.
Would it not have been more humane to hang her?
Humane? Speak you about a witch? This is a pestilence whose deadly poison spreads as relentlessly as the pox itself.
This witchery business weighs heavy on my soul.
Why? The women were both guilty in your mind, were they not?
They were so found by a jury.
Well then, what choice had you?
I don't know. The times are running at such fever, I cannot breast the tide, even if I wanted to. What worries me most is that I cannot see an end to it. Or who will be next cried out against?
The truth will ever out. Where the evil lies, the finger will point, and justice shall mete out the rest.
Come, I must get to the tavern for a flagon of wine to cleanse the taste in my mouth. Will you join me?
Shortly, good judge.
For the moment, I think my good offices may be needed by a young member of the cloth who appears to be ill. Know you him? The great hulking fellow in the long coat with a thick cape and the wide-brimmed hat? He is a papist, think you?
Nay, but near as bad. An Episcopalian, quite recently here from England. Were it not for his formidable strength and his skill as a blacksmith, he might have fared badly here in Salem Village.
Go to the tavern. I shall join you shortly. I would speak with this young man.
Do not anger him. He has superhuman strength.
I am clothed in the Lord's armor. I have no fear, and I have no intention of angering him. I only want to help him.
Have it your way. I shall meet you at the tavern.
Shortly. I shall not be long. You appear in trouble, good sir. May I be of help?
I can find no help, kind sir, except within myself. And from my God, I pray.
The second with the strongest staff to lift you up. I speak as a man of God, as you are, I understand.
I pray I still am, or can be, after what I have witnessed today.
Have a care what you say. It has the reek of blasphemy.
There is another kind of blasphemy in theology, sir. The crime of assuming to oneself the rights of God, as the people of this town have done.
By trying a witch and burning her? Do you not believe, when the devil has taken possession, that the evil must be purified by fire or destruction of the diseased body and soul?
I think there are other ways of casting out the devil.
You were at the trial?
All through the long horror of it.
And you did not find these witches?
Turn around, sir, and look at your handiwork. Circumstantial, and more than easy to comprehend two ways. I looked upon the face of that sweet young woman, and upon the dignity and breeding of the older one, her grandmother, and I could see their innocence.
What? Would you claim us wrong in our trial in judgment? Is it because you are not either a true colonist or of the true faith?
As to being a colonist, this is my chosen country. I have left England behind me. As to the true faith, my religion is a matter I prefer not to argue. There are many faiths, but most of them lead to God.
You are a strange young man. What is your name?
Gilbert Caton. And may I ask yours?
The Reverend Cotton Mather, of Boston.
You? If I'd been in my right senses, I would scarcely have passed the time of day with you.
What does that mean?
Turn around, sir, and look at your handiwork. A few smoldering ashes containing what once was the body of another human being. Are you proud of your work?
I did not find this woman guilty. That was for the courts to decide. I believe in justice as firmly as I do in the threat of Satan. But where the fiend is proven to flourish, he must be stamped out.
But where was this fiend and these women? What were they guilty of?
I am but recently here from Boston. I am not familiar with all the transcript. But would you question the word of a man such as Sir John Jameson?
Does his title give him immunity?
The facts do that, Mr. Caton. That these women drew his body from his bed in the night, brought him by occult means to their cottage in the forest, to try to lure him into lechery and original sin with the younger of the two witches.
Is Sir John so good a man? Has he led so good a life? Is it not possible?
Quiet, sir! You do yourself no service by even thinking such a thought. Have a care with your words, or fingers may go pointing your way.
Oh, Gad. I'd near given you up, Reverend Cotton. I believe you have the acquaintance of Sir John Jameson.
Your servant, sir.
The Reverend Cotton Mather.
He needs no introduction to me or any man of goodwill. It was an honor to have you with us for the witch burning. You were not here for all the trial, I believe.
No, just for the last day.
It was with a heavy heart that I had to bring the charges. But the evidence was monumental. Is it not so, Judge?
There was enough of it brought. But I cannot banish the woman's cries from my ears as the fire reached to her. And the face of the young girl we condemn to die tomorrow has troubled me for nights.
Must we then, because of a round cheek and melting eyes, shrink from doing the Lord's bidding? Evil is the way of such a maid, and more to be dreaded than all the hags in Christendom.
Strange rumors are afloat regarding her. This woman she called Granny, who was burned this morning, did pray not for her own life, but that the witch maid be saved. An uncanny thing that one witch should desire good to another witch?
But if they were kin...
Fool! Can you not perceive the work of the devil in this? The witch who died at the stake would have the other saved so that her own black spirit could pass into the fair young woman's form, and thus, with double force, the two could continue to wreak havoc on the world.
For the sake and peace of the community, she cannot be destroyed too soon.
I must go visit the prison. I wish to question her more closely.
Question her? About what? The evidence has all been established?
The factual evidence I care little for. That is and was the court's business. I wish to find out if she will recant, so that perhaps her soul might be saved. That would be a triumph supreme for me to accomplish in the name of the Lord.
Are you not somewhat aged for such a job, my friend turnkey?
81, going on 82. Just the man for the job. She don't get around me with any of her witch's blandishments.
Are we near the cell?
Most there, your reverend lordship. Why?
Let us all move as silently as possible. Is there a view hole in the door?
Aye, there is.
Good. Then I can look in on her and perhaps surprise her in some evil doing.
Here it is. I'll open it soft.
Can you see the harpy?
Yes.
Is she weaving some spell?
No. She sits on the pallet knitting. Why, she's a frail little thing. Not much more than a child.
All part of the enchantery. I was taken in myself. But she has tricks, all tricks, as I learned when she tempted me to ruin.
Very well. Jailer, let us go in.
As your lordship desires. Hey, my little she-devil. Here's two gentlemen of quality to see you.
One is of no quality. I know him only too well. The other, I believe I recognize as the Reverend Cotton Mather.
You may leave us, jailer,
that she should come outside.
Yes, sir.
It is true. I am who you say.
And what would you have with me, sir?
I have come to pray with you, Luna Claire, and to exhort you to confession.
There is no confession. I am no witch.
Will you kneel with me in prayer at least, daughter?
I cannot, sir.
Why not?
I am not of your persuasion.
Do you believe in God?
Oh, yes.
Then we have that in common, and can try to pray and wrestle the demon from your bosom.
No.
You do not wish to be delivered?
Obstinate of heart I may be, but Sir John holds me from prayer. I cannot kneel in company with him.
I prithee, Sir John, go outside and stand in the corridor. We shall see if the witch maid, relieved of your presence, will pray.
I had hoped to listen on the chance that she should confess, so that I might make some valuable notes.
The Lord granted me a ready pen. I shall make my own notes if it be necessary. If you will excuse us, Sir John.
You have only to command, Pastor. And I to obey. If you should need help of any kind, I shall be just beyond the door.
Let us kneel together, my daughter, and pray to God.
Minister?
Yes?
What shall I pray for? My life? That I may be delivered from the burning and death?
Your death is already ordained by the court. We pray for you to recant. Your body cannot be saved. The only hope is to find God's mercy on your immortal soul.
On the stone, cold floor, the slight figure of the maiden, a girl not yet in her 20s, sways and sags at the harsh dictum of the man beside her. He, Cotton Mather, kneels ramrod straight. His voice rasps as he speaks aloud unending platitudes, devoid of hope. Beside him, the maid prays to herself, the tears running down her pale cheeks. There is talk of God and the right and goodness and light, but not one trace of pity here. I shall return shortly with Act Two.
Isn't it nice to know you're free? to see the things you want to see. The touch to heights you dare to reach. To know you're all that you can be.
In the free spirit department, Buick's mid-size 1976 Century has a lot going for it. Efficient size, lots of room, neat things like that. But Century offers bonuses. It's a Buick, remember, which says one heck of a lot about how nicely it takes care of you. And Century does something for the sake of practicality that no other American mid-size car does. It comes with a V6 engine, and a Buick V6 at that. Century, the spirit will move you.
The spirit, Buick on the wing of the wind.
Sir John's attitude outside the jail cell is less unconcerned than it seems. He paces only a short stretch of the passageway, always within earshot of the endless prayer from the cell. The full-voiced exhortations of the minister he pays little heed to, but he stretches his ear to the fullest for any whisper from the maid.
In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Ghost, amen. You do not even say amen.
I beg your worship's pardon, but I am not familiar with your prayers, and I do not understand the God you pray to.
You refuse to recant?
How can I recant? I'm innocent. I beg of you, sir, to listen to what I was not allowed to say in court, and you will understand that neither Granny nor I had...
Sir John?
Aye, Reverend Abba.
You may return.
I request your favor, sir, but I believe I heard that your prayers had ended.
Mine, sir. The witch maid was not moved to pray.
I suspected as much.
Tell me, daughter, what you were about to reveal as Sir John came in.
With him here, it's difficult, minister.
It's on our witch! Tell him about Giles Corey, the old yeoman who saw you conversing with Satan in the forest near your house.
If it was Satan that I was in converse with that night, then he was in your shape. And well, your lordship knows, the old man was frightened by your threats into lying and saying it was a black fiend, which you might as well be, seeing your purpose there.
Silence, woman! I was not there, could not have been, since all my household has testified that I was safe at home in bed and asleep.
And if one lies, all lie to save their skins. For surely they are more afraid of your power than the devil's.
Maid, you go too far. Have a care with your tongue.
Hear me, mistress, I threaten you this. If you do not confess your unholy wickedness, you shall not be even accorded the mercy of being hanged. Instead, you will be burned alive.
No!
Or perhaps, hand and feet tied together, we shall lay you on the ground, while the villagers shall come and heap stones upon stones until the life is driven out of your body and you are pressed to death.
No, merciful God, please.
And I, whom you have afflicted, shall count each one as it falls. I shall myself drop the first stone, and I...
When that first stone strikes me, God in his mercy will take me to himself. You can count the stones the others throw, but I shall never know how fast they fall.
Now let us use all zeal to our ends, but let us deal in compassion as far as it is compatible with justice. To do any living thing unwarranted torture is a reflection on our manhood. One last word. Will you confess at last that you are a witch?
I cannot confess what is not true.
Come then, Sir John. Let us leave her to ready herself for death.
This November wind whistles through the bones. It will snow soon.
I welcome the walk and the wind to blow some cobwebs from my mind.
You are troubled by something?
This affair savors ill. Her last cry awoke strange feelings, and my heart turned within me.
You are a man of God and compassion, but have a care. Her powers of enchantment are strong and wicked.
If only I could have reached her.
No one can do that.
Perhaps. Perhaps not.
You intend to return to question the girl again?
No, let her rest in what peace she can find in the little life left to her to lead.
Ah, are you then for your room as soon as we reach the inn?
No, I have an errand I must pursue.
I have my coach at the inn yard. I should be honored to take you anywhere you desire.
Thank you, but I prefer to travel on this one by myself.
Master Mather, what brings you here?
I wish to ask you a question, Master Caton.
Will you enter?
No, thank you. I have not even hitched my horse. I have other riding to do.
Then ask your question.
Were you aware that the witch maid who is to die is an Episcopalian?
Yes, I was aware.
Then that prompts others. Why did you not go to her to bring her comfort or to help her cleanse her soul?
I would have gone to bring her comfort, but they barred me from entering the prison.
If I arrange it so you can enter, will you go to her?
With all my heart. Why do you extend her this comfort, convinced as you are that she is a witch?
I have failed to bring her comfort myself or release from bondage. Perhaps because we are of different denominations, that is of no matter. I shall ride now to the prison and have all preparations made that you may visit her this evening. It wants but an hour until dark. Wait 1 hour beyond that to make sure you will be passed in. May God go with you.
All these comings and goings over a little snip of a girl whose heels might as well be dancing in the wind and snow already.
It sounds as though you were already celebrating this spectacle.
Well, a man has little enough to amuse him with winter upon us. Here, when you come out, do you lock up tight behind you? Bring me the key in the common room. 'Tis too cold to wait upon you priests and your eternal preaching in these freezing halls. In you go. You, a witch, visitor, I see you.
Who is it?
Give me the torch, turnkey.
How am I to find my way back to the common room?
'Tis known ground for you. Feel your way, if not else. How could I, a stranger, find my way without light?
Oh, no, Lord of mercy. Well, hold it then a moment till I find my way to the stairs.
Go then, and hurry.
Have no fear. The cold will move even my old bones like the young.
So.
Are you come to torture me?
Hi. Look at me in the torchlight. Can you not recognize I am of the clergy? God be with you. I am of your persuasion.
Oh, at least God has answered one of my prayers.
Oh, my daughter, do not crouch on the floor. Come to me so that I may comfort you.
I want to, Father, but this chain about my leg.
My poor feathered bird. Rest where you are as I come to you. Oh, my dear Lord.
What?
You are frozen with cold.
And you are warm.
A moment. Let me brace the torch here in the sconce. Now, my heavy cape off and let me wind it about you.
Oh, let me touch your hand. Let me feel once again some human warmth.
Let us sit on the pallet and I will hold you in my arms with the cloak about us.
Oh, you're warm. And you've brought light and companionship.
How can they call so sweet a creature of God a witch?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I'm only a maid. I'm so scared. And are you really an Episcopalian priest?
Ordained in England, at Ely. I come here for new worlds to conquer and to help tame a savage land. To make my life, my home, my family someday.
Mm-hmm. Cold welcome you'd get from the Puritans.
They're not all so bad as they are sometimes painted. And I am young enough to wait out their welcome. How could they have condemned you as a witch?
I don't know. First they said Granny was a witch, and I lived with her.
Did your grandmother practice magic arts?
Well, she knew about herbs that helped to heal, and she could make poultices that drew out pain, and salves that she rubbed in with her hands that brought relief to others. Is that wicked?
I cannot see why. Who taught her these things?
She learned them long ago from a nurse she had, who learned them from a gypsy. My grandparents were very rich, with a large estate, but the Indians attacked them and killed my mother and father and everyone, and only Granny and I were left. And she was always a little queer after that. I mean, she wouldn't live in a town, only in the country. She was very good to me, and we were happy enough until Joseph, the one servant that we had left, died.
How long ago was that?
A few years. I don't remember exactly now. We buried Joseph, and then Granny said we must leave the house and start walking to the coast.
Why to the coast?
To take a boat for England, to my uncle. And we never did reach the boat. We stopped in a little house in the woods near here, and Granny was ill for a long time, and the rent was not cheap. At last the money was gone. And then Granny made some money with her healing. And she was also a midwife until...
I was at the trial. I know that testimony. Someone had a child born that was not quite right.
Yes, Sir John Jameson's daughter. That's what started it all. They'll burn me. They'll burn me. Are you kind? Are you human? Cannot you save me from them?
No, first tell me one more thing. You mean from Sir John?
Yes, he is the devil himself.
You paid him rent all these years as you grew into a beautiful woman?
Yes.
And then you had no money? He threatened to throw you out unless...
He talked of being possessed by the devil. He was the one who wanted to possess me. He was the devil.
And you were willing to be possessed?
And when the child, when that awful thing happened, he said that he would point to Granny as a witch and me, too. He came to the awful night. I told him I'd kill him and then myself if he tried to touch me.
Oh, my poor child.
Oh, please, please. I don't want to be burned. Can't you save me somehow? Save me somehow.
Your soul? I do not believe that needs saving.
No, no. Me. My body. Or if you can't, kill me here with your own hand. I do not fear death. I have nothing to live for. I fear only torture.
Save you.
Don't.
Save you if it were possible. But for what? Afterwards, to be hunted, pursued, retaken?
Then kill me!
No, no, never! Now that I have found you...
Father, please.
No, hush. Hush, little one. Not father. Not to you. Gil.
Gil. And I am Luna.
Luna. Now, then... You will swear to do everything I tell you.
You think there is a way? There is hope.
There is always hope. And I think there is a way. Yes, I think there is a way if only God will smile on us.
A man and a maid. And under the most harrowing and desperate of conditions... From the blackness of adversity, nurtured by the strength of their faith, the first seeds of love are planted in both hearts. But can this compassionate and tortured young man free this ill-starred maid? And even having done so, where can they find safety or sanctuary? I'll return shortly with Act Three.
Mr. Jones, Schmidlap at the Midtown Bank.
Hi.
About the check you wrote to the Lincoln Savings Bank for 5712?
Yes, sir.
I'm afraid you have insufficient funds.
Insufficient funds? There was exactly $57.12.
Yes, but you know there's a $2 monthly charge when your balance is below $500.
Oh, yeah. I've been paying it for years. That's why I'm switching to the Lincoln. See, they don't require any minimum balance.
We can give you a special low balance account with us for only 10 cents a check.
Look, I'm really sorry about this, Mr. Schmidlap, but at the Lincoln I can write all the payment orders I like, free. I'll send you one for the $2.
Payment orders?
Yeah, just the same as your checks, my name on them and everything, but at the Lincoln they're free. And money I don't need for bills stays in my savings account, earning maximum interest.
Oh, you have to keep a big balance in a savings account.
Nope. No minimum balance in my savings account either. Hey, Mr. Schmidlap, why don't you check it out for yourself? Their number is 782-6000.
The Lincoln Savings Bank, member FDIC.
Let's hear it from Martin Payne! We've got decorative lumber, lighting fixtures galore. We've got tiles and bulbs and brushes. We've got covering for the floor. Rollers, paints, and spackles, wall covering till you'll faint. Martin's Home Decorating Centers, it ain't just paint.
You can still decorate in time for the holidays and save. Today through Saturday, it's Martin's half-price paint sale. Pay only half price for a special selection of Martin's wall paints, ceiling paints, porch and deck paints, kitchen and bathroom enamels, all at half price. Buy Goodyear self-stick floor tiles, 45 cents each tile, in-stock pre-pasted wallpapers, 50% off regular prices. Cushion soft bathroom seats, only $9.99 each.
We've got decorative lumber, lighting fixtures galore. We've got tiles and bulbs and brushes. We've got covering for the floor. Rollers, paints, and spackles, wall covering till you'll faint. Martin's Home Decorating Centers, it ain't just paint.
What do you give someone special for Christmas? New Year's Eve. A fantastic overnight 24-hour New Year's Eve party for two at the elegant St. Moritz Hotel on fashionable Central Park South in New York. Just about the perfect Christmas gift at a rare price of $65 per couple. Now listen to what you'll give. A deluxe double room starting the afternoon of the 31st, dinner in the delightful Café de la Paix with a full bottle of iced champagne, piano entertainment, hats, horns, a sparkling celebration in bubbly St. Moritz-y style, and New Year's morning, continental breakfast at Rumpelmeyer's, one of New York's most delectable traditions, or breakfast in bed, and 3 p.m. checkout New Year's Day. Just $65, all taxes and tips included. Make arrangements today by telephone to give and get the Christmas gift of the year. New Year's Eve overnight party at the St. Moritz. Call PL5-5800. That's PL5-5800. Ask for Miss Park.
In the dim, dank, freezing cell, Gil Caton stands with the torch held on high, his eyes searching, his mind racing, a wild plan formulating in his mind. Frustrated at the very outset by the leg iron which binds Luna to the wall, she sits huddled in the blessed warmth of the heavy cloak, watching this man who has become the center of her universe, secure in her heart that he will find a way to save her.
The first problem is the leg iron. Once I get you to my house, I have forge and anvil and tools to cut it away. The wall. The wall is the only hope.
But the ring is buried in the masonry.
Oh, not quite. In the mortar. Now, between the stones. Now, here, hold the torch. I can brace my feet against the wall.
And pull it out.
The Lord must have had some reason to bless me with this extra strength.
Sweat is starting from your brow.
No matter. If this ring starts from the wall once more.
Oh, you pulled it out. You pulled it out. That's more than human strength could do.
Never underestimate the power of prayer. Now listen to me, Luna.
Yes?
You must trust me to the uttermost. Now, let me lift you and see how heavy you are. A feather. It can be done.
What can be done?
Now, I'm going to put you on my back and carry you out of the prison beneath my cassock.
Oh, I see. And I'll be very still.
Oh, forgive me now, but you must take off your frock.
My frock?
We must arrange it in the corner with a stuffing of straw to look like you.
Oh, of course. I'll do that.
While I take off my sash and cassock.
Oh, if I can just arrange it so they'll believe it to be me, it might give us more time. Oh, what is it? What have you done?
Oh, I just slipped my cassock all the way from below the waist to the neckband to make room for you.
How clever you are.
Adversity sharpens the brain. Now quick. Now, climb on this stool. So, now, arms around my neck.
Yes?
First, the cassock. Help me slip it over our heads. Oh, that's fine. Fine, room for us both. Now, to help support you, I bind my sash tight around us both. Oh, too tight? Can you breathe?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, I must lock the cell door. There. I must douse the torch. The more we are in darkness, the safer we are.
I trust in you, and your strength, and your belief.
And in the Almighty. Jailer! Jailer! Oh! God! Turnkey!
What to do? Is it the pester? Where's your light?
The witch has blown it out and left me in the darkness. I had to lock her back in the cell against the danger to us all.
Tell me if I'll come down again in this blackness. You say you locked the cell? Is she secure?
As secure as she can be.
Well, then, find your own way up in the shadows to the prison door.
The light there is poor. It's just what I wanted. Now, if you ever prayed, my little one, pray now. Freedom is just a few short steps away.
Ah, whither away so late in the evening, Master Mather?
You still at the inn, Sir John? I should have thought you had ridden home by now.
I had some business on my mind. I should have thought you might be abed.
I've been in my chambers reading the transcript of the trial, which my friend Judge Sewell was kind enough to make available to me.
Why would you wish to read all that? The thing is fait accompli.
There are some questions I would ask the maid, and I feel in duty bound to make some last attempt to see if she has repented.
Then you go to the prison?
This moment.
I shall be glad to drive you there.
No. No, I ride there myself. Nor do I think you should go near her again. For some reason, you inhibit her.
As you say. But the visit is useless. By law, the die is cast, and she will hang or burn tomorrow.
I have no power to free her body. I still may have hope to free her soul and bring her comfort. Good night, sir.
Are you all right? Do you want breath? I could get that.
Hush, hush. All the luck. If I can just make the shadow of the tree.
Brother Caton, is it not?
Oh, why, yes. Yes, Master Mather.
I thought I recognized that giant bulk, even in the shadows. By Harry, you seem even larger than I remembered.
Just the bulk of my cape.
Are you from the prison?
Why, yes.
Did you see the maid?
Yes.
Did she recant?
No, sir. She will never recant. Because she is innocent.
A matter of opinion. We shall see.
You're bound for the prison.
I am.
I beg you in the name of him we worship in our own ways to disturb this wretched girl no further. She is mercifully asleep now. Leave her the last few hours in peace in the name of compassion and humanity.
I had certain questions for her, but if...
Let God ask them when she is sent to face him tomorrow.
Well, we shall see. If she be asleep, perhaps I will not wake her. Good night, Master Caton.
Oh, what misfortune. Hold fast. We must make all haste now and hope all is not lost.
Oh,
forgive me. It's just that time may be so important.
Oh, any hurt is worth being free. Strike away.
You can try the file now.
And once my fetters are off, what then, Gil?
Oh, I don't know. The hue and cry will be raised all over this bloody town, which has gone mad. I have no horse to give you. I had hopes, perhaps, by boat. But I have neither money nor contact to see you safe away. It must be on foot. But be of good faith. Somehow the Lord will provide.
How can I ever thank you with all that I feel in my heart?
Oh, just let me see that smile break across your lovely face, and 'twill be thanks enough.
Strange way to meet the man I dreamed of.
Oh, hush! You're almost through.
I cannot more.
You must eat as much as possible. Now, you can carry little with you. We must find you some clothes to wear. What?
Oh, good Lord.
Not so soon.
Don't let them take me.
Into the bedroom, quick. Now, if I cannot turn them back, I can hold them back. Now, take my cape. It has what money I have in the pockets. Now, go by the window and try to make for Providence. There's an Episcopalian church there where you will be safe.
I will not go without you.
You must. You must save yourself.
Oh, my place is at your side. I'll never love any other man but you.
Nor I. Now, go quickly to the bedroom. Perhaps God is with us yet.
I'll be listening and praying.
Oh, forgive my tardiness, but I was at my devotions, sir.
You will pardon my intrusion, I hope. Do I speak to Mr. Gilbert Caton, the parson here?
You do?
Dare I beg a few minutes of your valuable time, sir? I am trying to trace my mother and my young niece. My name is Clare, Leonard Clare of Clare Hall, County Devon. My father had a large estate west of here, which was attacked by Indians. All of my family were killed, save my mother and niece, who, I am told, escaped. Since I arrived but lately in this country, I have only now, with tolerable certainty, traced them to this district. The town authorities claimed no knowledge of them, but since they were of the Episcopal faith, deemed that you might know something.
Come in, sir. Come. Out of the cold.
Thank you. Thank you.
You have horses.
Horses and a coach, yes.
Well, then you must fly this minute.
Huh? Fly?
The people of Salem burned your mother as a witch. I saw her burn. Outside there, in the market.
Oh, good Lord.
They have fixed the burning of your niece for tomorrow. There is to be a holiday, so the folks may revel in the sight.
To burn my niece, Luna? And you have the temerity to ask Leonard Clare to fly?
With her. Luna!
Oh, heaven be praised. Uncle Leonard.
Luna, my baby. Ah, my brother's baby. Oh. What have they done to you?
Nothing yet that can't be repaired. But there is no time.
Oh, not now.
Master Mather.
Do not be alarmed. I come here in amity, not in enmity.
You?
I shall explain in a moment. May I meet the gentleman before I speak?
This is Luna's uncle.
Leonard Clare of Clare Hall, Devon, now of the colonies. And I promise you, a man of resources, a man well able to afford to fight the persecution of this town and its shame, and all your power and evilness.
I would advise you not to try, sir. No, hear me out. As to my motives, my honesty, my devotion to the God I believe in, and my determination to wipe out witchcraft, I will not bandy words. I do what I believe to be right. And let history be the judge.
Your name will go down in it as a stench in the nostrils of any humane man.
So be it. I follow where I am called. Tonight, profoundly troubled after rereading the transcript of this child's trial and her grandmother's, perforce I could come to only one conclusion. A tragic miscarriage of justice had already been done. Another was about to occur. I went to prison determined to free the maid myself, and to offer her my protection against the wild riot which would follow on her release.
That was when we met you on the road.
Yes, sir. You tried to put me off. I can see why now, but God directed my footsteps there. I must tell you that her absence had been discovered before I even arrived, and that the mob is gathering. All the roads out of this town will be closed to everyone.
They cannot stop me.
They will, unless you have safe conduct. I suggest you get your niece into the coach post-haste, and yourself, draw the curtains, and I'll conduct you and your men through the mob.
I will not go without Gil.
The least I owe you for saving Luna's life.
You had best join them, Master Caton. When that drunken jailer wakes up to remember you saw her last, you will be torn limb from limb. It is a good bargain, a life for a life.
Ah, and you, sir?
I have no fear for mine, and I have much work to do. For all his title and position, Sir John Jameson must be brought to book for his crime against you and yours. I shall see that he is. And perhaps I may need one small breath of perfume to dilute that stench my name is to leave in history.
While the account you have heard is a fictional one, it is a somewhat sad thing that Cotton Mather is painted as black as he is. Even in his obsession against witchcraft, he was a scrupulous defender of all he thought unjustly accused. He was a scholar, in some sense, a scientist. And for all he was a fanatic, it was without thought of personal gain. He was also a family man, and perhaps would have allowed himself one frosty smile of pleasure at the outcome of this whole affair. I shall return shortly.
This is Douglas Fairbanks, Jr., and First Federal Savings of New York has asked me to announce a startling innovation in savings called the Statesman's Club. To become a member, you simply deposit and maintain $7,500 at First Federal Savings of New York. Instantly, you begin earning high interest and become eligible for a list of special services which are truly unique, such as a comfortable lounge where you can meet your friends, get free refreshments, magazines, and for the ladies, it's a perfect place to relax, receive messages, make free local calls, and there's even an attractive game room. For businessmen, there's a conference room, a private office, and members can get the same privileges in 70 other locations across the country. There is also free checking and special rates on hotels, travel, and dining.
For information on the Statesman's Club and high interest, call 397-9858.
Every day, thousands of people who want to get immediate attention send a telegram. For when it comes to making an impact, nothing makes it like a telegram. Now, Western Union has a new way to get the same kind of attention. It's a new service called Mailgram. It has the impact of a telegram, but at a fraction of the cost. To send a mailgram, just call Western Union. And within seconds, your message is on its way by wire to a post office near your addressee for delivery with the next business day's mail. We can also show you how to send thousands of mailgrams by computer as fast as you can send one. To send a mailgram right now, just ask your operator for the Western Union toll-free number for your area. Mailgram. Impact of a telegram at a fraction of the cost.
This year, don't just go to another hotel. Go to another world. The Americana world. Whether you're on business or pleasure, all 19 hotels are an uncommon pleasure. Plunge into a world of many pools and beaches. Then smash an ace at our tennis courts. Score a birdie on our golf courses. Or conduct your business just minutes away from your hotel. Americana is a world of convenience. And a gourmet world of everything from the seafood in Mexico City to the sirloin in Washington, D.C. And reserve a ringside table at Americana's World of Excitement. With everything from flying Indians to flaming swords, you'll take home a world of memories. Acapulco surf, Hawaii sunset, Palm Springs fairways, San Juan's casinos, Korea's temples, New York's theaters. But you don't have to conquer the Americana world, just a piece of it. Dial toll-free 800-433-1776 for reservations or your travel agent.
The madness at Salem was of short duration, and the good people of that unfortunate town soon returned to their senses. Gil Caton and his wife Luna did not return, mostly because of tragic memories, but also because the first of a long line of little Catons was well on its way. They were married in Rhode Island, one of the colonies most noted for its freedom of thought, and lived out a long and happy life together, nurturing their own children and that other larger group of children, the congregation of Pastor Gil Caton's church, which flourished in all good things, temporal as well as sacred. And so, amen. Our cast included Howard Da Silva, Marion Seldes, Kurt Peterson, William Redfield, and Court Benson. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division and Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, Brewers of Budweiser. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Have a good evening and come back again next week.
This has been Bill Holwick from West Texas for Broken Sea Audio Productions. www.brokensea.com. Good evening. Good evening. The music for tonight's episode was composed by Brian Seraphic Panopoli and Stevie Farnaby. Starring Draven Schoberg and Kyra Greenfield, my awesome granddaughter, and David Subkowiak.